work best if you press the mask against the tank, he said to Westfall. That'll conduct the sound better. Still looking uncertain, Westfall leaned forward until the mask was firmly against the glass steel. Corvus saw one of the adult dolphins swim toward her, curious. Then he caught sight of Baby, a dozen meters or so deeper. Say hello to Baby, he prompted. Hello, Baby, said Westfall. The young dolphin chattered, and Westfall flinched away from the tank.
He answered me, she exclaimed.
She?
Yes. She's a female, isn't she?
Westfall pressed against the glass steel again and asked,
How old are you, Baby?
Corvus knew the dolphins didn't keep time the way humans did. Baby clicked and chattered. Westfall said,
She asked me if I've eaten today.
Feeding's important to them, Andy said. Ask her where her mother is, Archer suggested.
Where's your mother?
More chattering, and an adult dolphin swam up beside Baby, clicking and whistling.
That's her mother, said Westfall.
Corvus watched happily as Baby and Westfall exchanged a few more words. At last the woman stepped back from the tank and pulled the mask off.
That was...
She seemed to search for a word.
Fascinating.
Taking the mask from her hands, Andy said, We're trying to enlarge our vocabulary of dolphin speech. I wish we could get back to Earth and start talking to some of them in their natural habitat.
We?
Westfall asked. With a self-deprecating little smile, Corvus said, I'm just the tip of the iceberg in this. There's a whole slew of people back at the University of Rome and a half dozen other research institutions. Archer said, Scripps, Woods Hole, several others. Westfall's expression hardened slightly.
But how do you know you're really communicating with them? Mightn't your so-called vocabulary simply be words you've placed as definitions of their noises? Mightn't you be fooling yourselves?
Shaking his head, Andy countered,
We've done some pretty strict tests, not just gabbing at each other, but asking the dolphins to find specific objects in the water, asking them to perform some acrobatics. It's a real language, and we're getting the hang of it. It's pretty slow, I admit, but we're learning.
Before Westfall could reply, Archer said, This work goes back more than 20 years, as I said. Dr. O'Hara was really the pioneer in this area.
Elaine O'Hara.
Westfall's expression suddenly turned glacial. Lane O'Hara, Archer said. She was a fine, wonderful person. Do you know her?
I never had the chance to meet her, Westfall said, her tone dripping acid.
Grant Archer's office. Max Yeager felt nervous. I appreciate your coming with me, he said as he and Dorn headed along the passageway toward Dr. Archer's office. The cyborg replied gravely, I have nothing to do this afternoon. The medics are reviewing the data on the pressure tests they ran on me. Yeager had his pocket phone in one hand, and every few steps glanced at the colored map it displayed to make sure they were on the right path. They passed the solitary woman in drab coveralls walking in the other direction. Up ahead, a pair of men in virtually identical dark blue tunics and slacks were heading in the same direction as they. Yeager guessed that they, too, were looking for Archer's office. The doors along the passageway bore small nameplates next to their keypads. This whole section of the station looked obviously older than the third wheel, worn, almost shabby. A quarter century of hard use, Yeager said to himself. It shows. May I ask why you want me to accompany you? Yeager was on Dorn's mechanical side. There was no discernible expression on the etched metal of his face, but the engineer heard the curiosity in his tone. Feeling more fidgety as they got closer to Archer's office, Yeager admitted, I kind of get jumpy when a big shot like Archer calls me into a meeting. I'm a lot happier down in the labs or getting my hands dirty on the hardware. You want moral support, Dorn said emotionlessly. Yeager bobbed his head up and down. Yeah, something like that. Sure enough, the two suits ahead of them stopped at a door and tapped on it for entrance. As the two of them stepped in, Yeager and Dorn got close enough to see Grant Archer standing inside welcoming them. Licking his lips nervously, Yeager said, This is it. Dorn agreed with a solemn nod and gestured with his human hand for Yeager to go in ahead of him. The engineer hesitated. Maybe we ought to knock or something. Before Dorn could reply, Archer looked past the two arrivals and spotted Jaeger just outside the doorway. Dr. Jaeger, he called. Right on time. And you brought Dorn with you. Good. Archer came up and shook hands with Jaeger, then with Dorn. Jaeger saw there was no desk in the office, no hierarchical arrangement of any sort, just an assortment of chairs that looked as if they'd been cribbed from a used furniture store. Make yourselves comfortable, Archer said, taking one of the recliners. He introduced the two other men as Michael Johansson, head of the station's Jovian Studies Department, and Isaac Lowenstein, chief of the Safety and Life Support Department. Mike and Ike? Jaeger asked himself. Is this supposed to be some kind of joke? It wasn't. Johansson was tall, his long legs stretching under the coffee table in the middle of their chairs. He had a long, narrow face with sharp angular features and a scattering of freckles so pale they were almost yellow. His hair was the color of straw and baby fine, wispy. His eyes were steel blue. A Viking's eyes, Jaeger thought. Piercing. No nonsense. Lowenstein, on the other hand, was a small, swarthy, intense man with tightly curled midnight dark hair, smoldering jet-black eyes, and a six-pointed star tattooed on the back of his right hand. Refugee, Jaeger recognized. Must be third generation. His grandparents probably got killed when Israel was wiped out. They never forget. Both Mike and Ike were staring hard at Jaeger like a pair of police detectives about to grill a suspect. Jaeger felt as if he were sitting on a hard cement block instead of a cushioned armchair. Perspiration trickled down his ribs. This is going to be an inquisition, he knew. Archer was sitting straight up in his recliner. But he smiled easily as he said, "We're here to review the status of the submersible and see if it's ready for a crewed mission." Lowenstein immediately said, "The vehicle hasn't been flown yet. You can't risk a human crew in an untried vehicle." His voice was sharp, cutting. Before Jaeger could object, Johansson clasped his bony hands around his knees and looked up at the ceiling as he said in a slow drawl, "We've obtained as much data as we can from uncrewed missions. If we're to make any progress in understanding the Leviathans, we need a human mission." Archer scratched at his trim little beard. "I find that I agree with both of you." He turned to Jaeger. "Dr. Jaeger, what do you have to say?" Max had to swallow hard before he could find his voice. "So what do I have to say?" "As you know," he began, stalling for time to arrange his thoughts, "I've spent the past 5 years in Cellini designing the Faraday and supervising its construction." "From 400 million kilometers away," said Lowenstein. "The data's the same no matter what the distance," Jaeger shot back. "But you're right. Yesterday was the first time I've seen the ship firsthand." And Archer prompted. "She's a beauty," said Jaeger. "Have you gone aboard it?" Lowenstein demanded. "Not yet. But I checked out all her systems from the command center. She's ready to fly." Johansson said, "Then we should start the procedures to pick a crew." Lowenstein objected. "We shouldn't risk a crew until the vehicle has demonstrated that it's safe to operate." Archer said, "There's some urgency in this. We need to get a team down there before the IAA decides to hold us up." "For very valid safety reasons," Lowenstein said. "But if all the ship's systems check out," Archer countered, "then why should we hesitate? This isn't the Dark Ages when test pilots had to try out new aircraft because they didn't have computers to simulate their performance." "Simulations," Lowenstein said, "are not actualities." Jaeger said, "Now wait a minute. The whole point of this exercise is to send a human team down to the level where those giant whales live." "And get them back alive," Lowenstein added. Johansson nodded. "And get them back alive," Archer said, "before the IAA steps in and strangles us with red tape." Johansson looked worried. "Do you think they would really try to stop us? Why?" "We're risking human lives here," Lowenstein said. Archer said, "Mrs. Westfall seems to be afraid of that. She's just as much told me that she'll do everything she can to stop us from sending a human team in." "May I say something?" Dorn asked. They all turned toward the cyborg. I presume that I will be one of the crew, Dorn said.